Welcome to A Brit in LA with star of stage and screen, Lauren Samuels. Each week, she'll be navigating different areas of the US entertainment industry after swapping London for La La Land. She'll be meeting inspiring figures who are achieving their own Hollywood dreams.
Hi guys, whether you are a first-time listener or a returning fan, you are most welcome to A Brit in LA with me, that Brit, Lauren Samuels. Remember, this show is entirely made for you guys, so if you do have any questions or suggestions, then please contact me via the website abritinla.fm. More about that at the end, but now let's get into today's episode because I'm really excited. My guest today, even though she is American, represents the best of British. She runs the California branch of the Royal Society of St. George, which works to spread and celebrate our best British customs and traditions internationally. Its patron is King Charles III, and talking of royalty, my guest today is indeed descended from nobility. Her very inspirational and charitable work over the decades have earned her medals from the likes of the President of the United States and many other awards from world leaders and royalty on various continents, including, guys, even an honorary princess title. Wow, how glorious to welcome to A Brit in LA, Princess Karen Cantrell. Hello.
Oh, hello, and thank you so much, and I'm honored to be with you.
Thank you. Well, I'm so honored to chat to you. Thank you so much for being here. As a Brit new to living in America, I've got to say, I've been surprised by quite how much fascination there is here with our royal family. Why do you think Americans are so interested?
Well, history is not a mystery. And if you do your genealogy or have your family's genealogy done by a professional, or you can even go on different genealogical sites and study your own genealogy, then you are able to look at that and get excited about it. Mm-hmm. And it really is, as I said, history's not a mystery. So you go into the history of your families and you are starting to see the building block from where you now are living. You see families, you see the struggles they went through. You see who they married, who they divorced. I mean, you have in-laws, and I have a couple of outlaws in my genealogy.
Wow.
So you get that whole ball of wax. They say you can choose your friends, but you can't choose your family. So it's interesting to find out who you related to, who all of your ancestors married, the wars that they participated in. I mean, for me, I had in the same family people who chose the Union over the Confederacy, and then the Confederacy over the Union, and they actually ended up killing each other. Wow. So it's interesting to see the passion of your genealogy. And I think Americans, you know, we're a young country, but they do go back to their roots. I think it's a longing. I think for me, it's behind the veil. I call it behind the veil. When your parents and ancestors have passed, there is a veil. I truly believe it. And I think sometimes that veil, they call you from behind the veil, and they want you to know who you related to and why. And I think that's pretty much it. I believe that.
That's so interesting. And I must say, I've also been really moved by the warmth of my welcome from the locals. How are British people generally regarded in the United States these days?
With great respect, I have to say. I mean, I was born in Tennessee, but I was reared in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And we have so many British people that came into South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, and they were so hospitable. They had manners, they had culture, and we learned from them so very much. And so with having said that, even in California, where I know people think we're a crazy state, we love the British and we welcome them, and we do learn from them. And quite frankly, it's an honor to have them in our country.
Oh, I love that. And I'm so glad that you mentioned manners, because we Brits do seem to be especially appreciated here for our good manners. But it is often said that good manners are gradually disappearing from society. So why are they an important tradition to hang on to, and how are you doing your bit to help?
Well, we have a wonderful protocol officer, Marianne Parker, and she's from South Africa. She studied at The Hague. She studied manners in Great Britain and protocol, and she is one of their guiding directors with the Royal Society of St. George, California. And of course, we have Sandro Minetti, who is absolutely perfect. And, you know, he has that wonderful history, and has the ability to counsel you in a very, very nice way. And so does Marianne, to advise you. And then you understand certain protocols, such as we had Marianne come to a Royal Society of St. George meeting at the Peninsula Hotel in Beverly Hills. And she had a program on British manners and tea. And you learn so much and you are appreciative of it. And everyone was like, when they first started out with a teacup, they were holding the pinky up, and she goes, no pinkies up. That's a fallacy. That's a fantasy. Don't do that. And she went through the history of manners all the way through from the beginning, when we formed manners, I guess you could say, and we all learned from it. And people are eager to do the right thing. They don't want to embarrass themselves or their businesses when they're at a tea or at an office lunch. So it transcends into your business life as well. Good manners go into not only your personal, but your business life, and can help you if you have good manners.
So true. And you know what, in fact, talking about manners, I was out for dinner with someone only two nights ago, and this person actually complimented my manners and said, oh, it was so nice when you were ordering your meal to the waitress that you said, please, may I have, rather than, can I get, you know, which, yes, which a lot of people tend to say these days. I've got to ask as well at this point, what are some of the bad societal manners that annoy you the most? Is it chewing with your mouth open, or?
That's my number one. I have, okay, been, and people are chewing with, and they're talking with their mouth open, and you can see the broccoli, and it's like, oh my God, please stop. I do stop them. I go, you know, you have a little.
Yeah.
You know, I said, let's wait just a moment until you complete it. I know you're so excited about the topic, because if you could just wait just a moment until you complete it.
That's such a polite way.
Then let's continue. So that's what, opening with the mouth is just, you know, the worst ever. And then when you have soup, of course, in America, sometimes it's like, Don't slurp the soup. Let's eat it this way, you know. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people know I'm just hell on wheels with manners. So when I have a dinner party or I have an event, they will cue themselves from the way that when I pick up the spoon and how I dip it in and eat, and they will follow what I'm doing. And so I think that's important. And then Marianne Parker, of course, they watch Marianne, and they want to do the right thing. You know, they want to be more accepted in society. And it's just being a good human being in my eyes, you know, that you want to do these things.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned dinner parties at yours and people, you know, following after you, because I have to ask about your title, your princess title. You know, who wouldn't want to be a princess? But does having a princess title hold you to a higher standard of behavior? Does it come in some sort of rule book?
No, it does not, unfortunately. But nobility is just in that word, noble. To act noble. And to act noble is to appreciate the people that you're serving. And if you have a nobility title, you have the responsibility. Let's do that again. Let me say it again. Nobility, responsibility. To conduct yourself in a professional and loving and kind manner to others. And I think that Queen Elizabeth was the epitome of nobility. I watched everything I could watch on YouTube, any book I could get to follow. to look at how the table settings were at the different castles, and to try to emulate her as much as possible, which is impossible for a commoner like me, but I loved her so much. I wanted to emulate her, and she was a guiding force in my life, even as a child.
Wow. I love that. She was such a, it's emotional to talk about her sometimes, I think, as Brits, particularly being, just my entire life was Queen Elizabeth II. You know, I didn't know any other monarch. We heard at the start that royalty is in your blood, but growing up in America, how did this love of all things British emerge? Was it TV shows, books, watching the royal family?
Well, my family started doing their genealogy about 50, 60 years ago. And so we would have stories from my grandparents and my aunts, and they had records that they had brought from Great Britain, from England, I must say England, mm-hmm. Scotland, Ireland. And they said, we had this castle and this is who you related to. Well, as a small child, you're like running around and you're like, well, okay, that sounds great. And then particularly in the South, when you are about 6 years old, that's when you are learning your table manners, you're learning your speaking, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir. And so I realized, and my mother was teaching us these things, you know, that she says, you really got to understand who your ancestors were and where you came from. That is so important. And so she would bring out these genealogical charts that they had at the time and review these different things with us. And she said, you're related to the Queen of England. You're related to, you know, John of Gaunt is your 23rd great grandfather. And this is history. And you, the Magna Carta, you have two ancestors who signed the Magna Carta. And she was bringing out all of it. So as children, we didn't realize the value when we were so young, but when we became teenagers and then in high school, I had some teachers in high school that also studied genealogy. So they were able to come and assist at me and take it a little bit further and then a little bit further. So that's how the appreciation really came for all things wonderful in genealogy. And I love England. My family goes, since we were children, back and forth to Gloucestershire. Yeah. And that is where most of my relatives in the past came from, that particular area. And my mother insisted that we learn how to at least, you know, attempt to fox hunt and ride. And so my mother was a great equestrian eventer, and we learned dressage. And so then it just sort of, you know what, it's like I said to you before, like coming behind the veil, I always felt drawn to these things. It's like my ancestors were saying, this is what you had if you believe in a past life, or this is what you were doing. And you just, I don't know, there's something inside you that just takes over and you go, I'm going to learn everything I can. And so all our trips back and forth to England, not only we were fox hunting at a very young age, which I don't do anymore, by the way. And then when we were there, we were able to visit different cities where our relatives had been and lived, and go into different libraries and meet different people that would help us also find out more information. So I love celebrating my Englishness.
Yes, wow. I feel like you're even far more English than me, I've got to say. let's talk about the British royals. What is the correct etiquette for greeting them? Because, for example, and I do believe this could happen, if King Charles were to make me a dame of the British Empire for my services to podcasting, how should I greet him?
I would greet him as Your Grace. And before, I can tell you now, if this happened to you or to me or to anyone, their officers of protocol would be on the phone with you, making an appointment so that you would come to them. Oh. And they would teach you exactly what to say and exactly how to behave. Because here again, that's what our Englishness is all about also is behaving, behaviors. And they would not want you to embarrass yourself, nor would they want to be embarrassed. I know that we had one president that went up to Her Majesty and hugged her, and you never touch her.
No, my face then when you said that, I was like, wow.
Horror story. And it was on camera, on television. I was like, no, don't do that. Don't touch her. Don't touch her. And of course, he was ridiculed heavily for that. But it's just, he probably, as the president, I'm not going to say which president it was, but he was just slaughtered on the news for bad behavior. So you will never have to worry about those things if we're called and to do something like that. They are so wonderful. They teach you. They want you to know well in advance how to act.
I'd be so nervous. I think I'd be studying. I'd be like, how do I do it properly? You know, you wouldn't want, like you say, you wouldn't want to embarrass yourself. Kate, the Princess of Wales, seems to demonstrate so much of what a princess should be. I mean, I just feel like she can do no wrong. What do you admire about her?
Composure. Mm. She is composed at all times. Even through all this horrible scandals and even through the families with the arguments and things that occur, she has maintained decorum, professional decorum. She's composed. She's well-read. If you look at her at all times, she is her posture is erect. She's perfectly composed, and she's able to walk beautifully. And she can also, with her beautiful children, you can see she's a mommy and they love her, but she still gives them the look. You know, we all had our parents that gave us the look, which was do it one more time and you're going to regret it. So, I mean, my mother had the look too. And it was like, we were like, oh my God, we have to behave now. And she's just so regal. That's another word for Kate, is she's regal. And she's just the epitome of sophistication and grace and kindness.
Absolutely. Born to be the Princess of Wales. Yeah, she's absolutely stunning. And here, of course, in California, Harry and Meghan are charting a brand new course for themselves. What do you think the future holds for them?
Not much.
Well, sure.
Okay. That's my personal opinion. I, for one, am quite disappointed.
I think a lot of British people are, yeah.
Quite disappointed.
Yeah, it's strange to think of Harry in California, I suppose, being a royal, not being in England. But yes, it's interesting. It will be interesting to see where their future goes. I'm sure we'll all be watching with bated breath. When the Queen died, the Royal Society of St. George in California held a most elegant and beautiful tribute event just a few days later in Beverly Hills. How do you sum up, I know we've briefly spoken about our admiration for her, but how do you sum up the legacy of Queen Elizabeth II?
She was an icon. She was an icon. And we all loved her so much. And we still love her. Mm-hmm. And we do miss her.
Yeah. I think that's just the best word for her, isn't it? Just an absolute icon. I can't imagine now a monarch having so much admiration from everybody in the country. No, just wonderful, wonderful.
She touched everybody's life. She not only touched the people of England and Great Britain, she touched the world's lives. She was a Mother Teresa of the world. She was filled with kindness. I mean, she's the person that you would just look to. I know I did, for direction on many things, just etiquette and how she conducted herself. And she was one of the strongest women I think I've ever known in my life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Strength, not through anger or belligerence. She had strength and courage. She pulled that through herself, her spirit. Mm-hmm. And that's something that is so admirable to me.
Completely, completely agree. From the pandemic to the forest fires in California, your charitable group lends helping hand in a red, white and blue glove. Can you talk about some of the ways that the RSSG has been able to assist the local community when it's been in need?
We had face masks when no one had face masks in the beginning of the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
We had our honorary member, Mr. Joey Zhao, Chinese gentleman, and he provided us with close to probably 50,000 face masks when no one had them. And we distributed those face masks to JFK Hospital because it's a hospital for the indigent. And the larger hospitals had masks, a few, but not, they one hospital didn't have as many as we had. So we distributed those masks to JFK Hospital in Indio, California, and they were ever so grateful. We also took them to the United Nations Association of the Coachella Valley and distributed them to the nursing homes. And that was a great help because truly, I think that the elderly, they were the last people that were being thought of, in my opinion. I know they were here. And so we had a board meeting and we said, well, okay, we're gonna take the face mask to JFK because they have indigent, they'll never probably get any help, and the nursing home. So that was the two largest places that we took the face masks. And then we gave them to the homeless in Palm Desert, California. We have, unfortunately, there is a lot of homeless in America. It's a tragic thing, but it's real, it's true. And they were not allowed because they couldn't afford a face mask. Mm-hmm. So we provided them with face masks so they could at least go in and get a coffee. They would have it. And we also provided them with breakfast, croissant or muffin, and coffee and milk for 3 months in Palm Desert. We also assisted with the Idyllwild fire that occurred. I had my store Lady Golf the Fashion House. It's a 6,000 square foot store in Palm Desert, California. And we opened it up. I called the news agency and I said, look, these people have no food. The food bank is empty. We have to help them. And it was shocking to me because some of the cities that are surrounding the area said, well, that's not really our problem. I said, well, they're an unincorporated city. They don't have a mayor, a sheriff's office or anything. They're just in the mountains. And everything they own is burnt down. So, you know, we have to do something. And then some people said, well, this just, you know, good luck and do what you can. And to make a long story short, we raised over $50,000 and we had tons of food. We had the Agua Caliente American Natives sent over a half of a semi loaded with food. Their employees gave food. People of the Coachella Valley have the biggest hearts. They came baby diapers. I'm talking their cars were filled to the top. I had to push everything in my store out of the way I said, just start stacking the food. And they go, well, what are we going to do with it? I said, just take it. We need water. We need dog food. We need baby food. We need diapers. We need meat in cans. I said, I don't care. Just get it here and let me worry about it. So I contacted the different fire departments in the area. They were eager to work together and we made so many runs back and forth to Idyllwild and their food bank was fully stocked again because our government is a good government, but you know, as all governments in a disaster, when it happens, they were really not that prepared to take care of these people. And so that's when you got to get with your neighbors. You've got to know, you know, the churches or the temples or whatever your religious belief is, you know, wherever they can have and give to charity, then you must contact them. And they all did. Everybody just pulled together. And it was one of the most beautiful things we ever did. And we're very proud of that.
Yeah, wow, fantastic that the RSSG were there, really. It's incredible. What advice would you have for me as a British performer in America? I'm interested, should I hang on to my Britishness in every way, shape or form? Or should I immerse myself in the local customs and traditions and maybe start to talk in a more mid-Atlantic accent?
I would keep to tradition. You know that I'm going to tell you that. tradition. Hold on to it. It's so valuable.
Yeah.
You know, be yourself, but be who you are. One of the entertainers that we love is Matt Goss. I know you probably know Matt. And he is an honorary member of the Royal Society of St. George. And he's been a great inspiration to a lot of individuals. You know, he was kind enough to come to the Beverly Hilton Hotel and when we had an event last year and speak about the things that he had been doing for the breast cancer awareness. And he's such a great representative of England and such a gentleman, perfect mm-hmm. manners. And we love him and we appreciate him to be on our honorary. He's a trustee. As well as Sandra Minetti is a trustee for us. We're delighted to have Sandra as well. But I would just say, hold on to your tradition.
Hang on to my Britishness.
Please don't give it up. Don't give it up. If I didn't live in America, I would live in Great Britain.
Would you?
Yes, absolutely.
Even though we've got all the rain and the clouds.
I love it there and I go back and forth and I love it there. I have businesses here and I'm involved in the Los Angeles and Beverly Arts and this Salvador with the French. And I have so many things here that I could not move back there, but trust me, I go back and forth and I love it.
Well, I must say I've never felt quite as British as I do living in California. I didn't think I was that British a person, but living in California, it does make me go, oh, you know, no matter how sunny and beautiful it is here and how wonderful American people are, because they are, as I said at the start of the interview, they're so warm and lovely and welcoming. There's nothing quite like England.
No, and that, you know, that's truth. That's not braggadocious. That's just the God's truth in reality. That is truth.
Well, I love how much of a huge fan you are of England. It's been such an honor to talk to you, but I have to ask, what do you look forward to next? What does the future hold for you, Princess Karen?
Funny you should ask. I will probably sell my business and work more in the philanthropic area, probably in the arts. I am the rotating chairman, and I was just elected yesterday as the permanent chairman of the Los Angeles and Beverly Arts. And that is helping that organization. We want it to be the Academy Awards of the art world. And that's not only painting and sculpting, we want it for music and for performance. And we just had a meeting, a very big meeting yesterday, and I will probably work into that 3 to 4 days a week, starting in 2023. That's important to me because I want young artists, I want people to have a real chance to show who they are and to be seen and for other people to have an appreciation of their lives. And when you are in a country that is a third world country and you have the ability to paint or draw or sing or whatever in the art, and you feel desperate and depressed because you don't think you'll ever be discovered. You know, Los Angeles and Beverly Arts, we want to open those doors for these people. And that's my next adventure, is being able to do that. And also working with Prince Aramis Haile Selassie, who is the ninth grandson of the former emperor. I am a water person. So my husband and I donate to build water wells in Ethiopia. And the Prince Aramis has water initiatives with solar, which is so much easier to operate. And so I will do the Los Angeles and Beverly Arts. I will work with Prince Aramis with his water projects and continue that because I love him and Princess Saba Kabiti. He just came back from Ethiopia, and there are, as a matter of fact, there'll be an announcement. We have this wonderful, wonderful English gentleman And he is also helping Prince Aramis. And there's going to be some exciting announcements coming forward very soon about that.
Well, I'm very excited to hear how everything goes in the future. You have such a inspiring, incredibly exciting, amazing life. Princess Karen Cantrell, thank you so much for being my guest on A Brit in LA.
Oh, you are amazing. Awesome, awesome, awesome sauce. Thank you. And thank you to the wonderful people of England and Great Britain for listening today. And I'm available. So if I can help in any way, let me know.
You've been listening to A Brit in LA with me, Princess Lotna. I wish I'm not a princess, but thank you to my guest who is an actual princess, Karen Cantrell. And as always, thank you so much to you guys for listening. Now, it is that time when I'm going to ask you for a favor. You know what's coming. If you've enjoyed the podcast and you're listening on Spotify or Google Podcasts, then why not leave me a little 5-star rating? And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Audible, then why not leave me a little review of the show? I would absolutely love to hear what you guys think of A Brit in LA and what you'd like to see from the show in the future. And of course, if you've got a question for me or Noel, then ask it in the contact section of the show's website, abritinla.fm, and we will be answering your questions in our upcoming season finale episode in a few weeks. It's sure to be a banger, so get those comments in, guys. Have an incredible week until we meet again, and wherever you are in the world, always remember, go for your dreams. TTFN.
Well, wasn't that amazing? It was created and produced by Podcast Partners. They're really lovely people and rather good at all this podcasting guff. Find out more at podcastpartners.com.